Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sans Pants Radio.
Australia's most biased podcast network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bookish. I'm George Demorel. This is a show where we ask you what's your story and what does it say about you. Today on the show we have comedian and podcaster Kelly Festuca. How you doing, Kelly?
Hey mate.
Festukes. In my head I always call you, I always say Festukes and laugh at how funny that sounds, but I don't know if I've ever said that to you in person.
Oh mate, I welcome it. Thank you so much. No one ever calls me Kelly. People who really don't know me call me Kells and I hate it. Like people at my day job go Kells and I'm like, okay, you don't know me.
And I'm not going to correct you.
No,
I don't want you to know
me. No one calls me Kelly. Like none of my friends go, hi Kelly. Like it's always Stukes, Stuka or Festukes. Or, okay. You know, arsehole, dickhead, whatever. No. But, yeah, everyone calls me by my last name. It's a very – you know what it is? It's Italian, but one of my great-grandfathers was adopted, so I feel like it's a more Serbian-Italian name. It just sounds like a real soccer player name, you know? Like Festuca on the outside, goes for goal.
Festuca!
And I come from a football family as well, so – everyone's aware. Little Stukes, Big Stukes, Mad Dog Stukes, my sister, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Really? Mm. Mad Dog Stukes?
Mad Dog, yeah. Everyone calls him Mad Dog. It's
real
funny.
Okay, so just a bit about you before we go into the book. Yep, so you're a comedian. You've been doing it now for like over 10 years, right?
I think my first spot was at the Comics Lounge in the end of maybe October 2006. So 14, 15 years. One of those years was on hiatus because of COVID. So I reckon last year I didn't perform for maybe 7 or 8 months. And then this year I reckon, besides Comedy Festival where I did a show, I reckon I've gotten up this year maybe, I don't know, 20 times, if that.
Yeah.
We just had another 2-week lockdown in Melbourne. And I had, because after Comedy Festival, I took like 2 or 3 weeks off just to kind of get my head together and sent in. I'm working as well and just and some other stuff, you know, happening, and it's just I just needed some time. My dog's been really, really sick, so I was just exhausted. So I just like actively took like – my puppy that
– no, it's a real thing. It just sounds funny.
It just sounds funny, I know. So our puppy that me and my roommate got during lockdown last year, she's had – she got meningitis in her brain, so she's been having some pretty full-on seizures and stuff, so that's been full-on trying to like manage her and working and comedy. So I took like 3 weeks off doing stand-up, just like didn't actively ask for gigs. If I got asked to do a gig, I did it, but I just didn't actively ask for anything. And then when I was ready, I was like, all right, let's get back into it. And I booked a ton of stuff, and it was the 2 weeks of lockdown we just had in Melbourne. Like money stuff, like just lost money, money and gigs.
I'm with you. I was like, okay, yeah, last year got about halfway before I fully accepted it. I was like, before the big lockdown, I was like, okay, well, this year's a write-off for anything comedy-wise. But now it's looking like in my head, I'm kind of starting to write off this year as well.
It's really hard. And it's hard to write stand-up. This is one of the things that I've talked about. And I've actually got a mate, Rose Bishop. She's coming over soon. When we finish here, to just to kind of bounce some ideas off each other, because I don't have the will to write. I feel like I've lost my funny bone, You know, like I feel like a phony telling people I do stand up because I'm just, even though we're, you know, we get out of lockdown, it still takes two weeks for gigs to come back. And then it takes, and then you're pushed back because I had gigs during that time. So I've been postponed now because they let the people that got cancelled be up. And, you know, so it's like, oh man. And because the only way to get better, the only way to write material for me is to get up on stage because then it's come from it and stuff. So it's just, it's real hard to sit down and then something will happen in the house where I'll make, you know, a funny joke. My roommate's like, oh, that's really funny. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. I'm funny, you know, like I forget. Because I just, you know, because I had to take up a, you know, a full-time day job because I lost all my comedy incomes. And, you know, like it just takes your funny out. It's just gone. But I mean, it's there. And the thing is, and I went on stage, my first gig back, it was fine, you know. I wasn't as much fit as I want to be, but I still got it. It's fine.
Yeah, you almost forget, and then you just have a bit of banter, and you're like, oh, yeah.
I'm hilarious. I've been doing this for years. I've, like, shared stages with incredible comedians. I mean, and that's funny because in one breath I'm like, I'm funny, I know what I'm doing, and then another breath I'm like, I'm not funny. What am I doing? I'm just not funny. A lot of self-doubt. But it's all right. You know, COVID, you reevaluate your priorities. What do you want to do? You know, when comedy gets taken away, what's left in life? So. A lot of evaluating, you know, got another dog. She's sick, but I'm glad we got her because anyone else may have not even taken because she needs a lot of care. Like she gets medication 5 times a day. So.
Oh my God.
So 6:30 is her first med.
You replace comedy.
Yeah, with a sick dog.
I mean, this dog is sounding like kind of a metaphor, to be honest. Is caring for that dog all you're doing today?
I got a murder doco on Netflix on the telly. Right.
Mwah. Right now going while we're talking.
Oh, I had it play. I just paused it because we're talking now.
But it's ready to go. You're like, as soon as it's done, it's just my options there.
Oh, I'll probably fall asleep in it, to be honest, because I've got a pretty heavy eye at the moment. But I'll probably what will happen is when we finish here, I'll need to take because I have ADD, so I take Ritalin every day. And I take I take it in the morning and in the afternoon. So I have to take my Ritalin at about 1:30. So I'll probably want to sleep, but once I take that Ritalin, it's not going to happen.
Oh, right. So is it twice a day you take Ritalin?
Yeah, so I take 2 10-milligrams in the morning and then 1 in the afternoon and early afternoon. Like if I forget to take it, which is a lot, one of the traits of having ADD is like a really good memory with like a lot of stuff, like with long-term stuff, like really good memory with like conversations, movies you've seen, places, people, dates, but short-term memory, terrible. So I'll take a tablet and then forget if I've taken it or not, you know, because that's the – so I'll take my tablet. So yesterday I took my tablet and then I took it and then I was like, I think I already took it today. I think I already took it like 20 minutes ago. But because you just like, you know, and it's a very common ADD or ADHD trait, we just forget. I just forgot because I'm doing it, I would have taken it. While my mind was somewhere, like I'm standing up, I'm doing, yep, blah blah blah, blah tablet, blah blah, and then 20 minutes later, I'm like, actually, so I have to. Sometimes I really have to say it, like I have to say I am taking a tablet, so that I remember. Like, and same, a lot of people who even don't have this even do it with like ironing, like the iron or the stove, or like curling irons or something, where you're like you have to like envisage yourself like pulling out the plug, going before you go to work, like I unplug the iron, you know.
Yeah.
You find that too?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It's common. Feel like I'm not, I'm like, do I have ADD? Because, like, yeah, that happens sometimes with everything. I'm like, did I do that? I'm like, I don't. Did you? So I've actually had a friend who recently got diagnosed for ADHD.
Let me guess. Female?
No. Oh. Male.
No. Oh, well, the reason why I was so confident, because if you've got female friends and you talk about this, there's been a massive surge in women in their 30s being diagnosed with ADD or ADHD. Because a lot of men or a lot of little boys get diagnosed when they're young because they're like 5 and 6 and they can't stop climbing off the walls. But women don't get – they're not in that because we don't climb on walls and, you know, run and go crazy. So no one ever thinks women can get it. And it's only until a woman gets older where it's like, oh, why can't I hold down a job? Why can't I pay off debts? Why can't I hold conversations? Why do I find it hard to hold on to friendships? All the shit stuff that comes of being having ADD really manifests now in your 30s, because we never got taken care of when younger. And women have a really unique way of being adaptable, where we've covered it up for so long, right? So there's all these traits that I have that I have covered it up for years, right? Like, and when I originally got my test done for it, he's like, I don't know how you have survived this long, because we are, and I hate to sound like a big femo, but whatever, I am, that women are we're resilient in that way. So one of the
Oh, my God, you're such a feminist.
I know, right? Ugh. We are, because, like,
we get it.
In little boys, you know, something about when men have it, it's like, it's more acceptable. Oh, yeah, that's Dave-O. He's a bit nuts, or he's a bit like this. But with women, we really have to be more sensible and blah, blah, blah. And if we it's little stuff like, we mask it. So I've got really good ways of covering it up. So one of the ways is that, comedy, it's doing stand-up, performing and stuff like that, as opposed to having a job where you have to really focus and do a job and sit at a desk for 8 hours, because that was always – and I always had a hard time holding down jobs like that, because they're like, I'm late all the time, or, I can't do the job because I can't focus and I can't understand it. But I'm really good, but my memory is incredible. I got an incredible memory, not short term, but yeah. But it's like, one of the questions is, what were your grades like in high school? And I'm like, terrible, because I couldn't learn. But we fell through the cracks, But yeah, anyway, interesting. If you mention it and also because what happens with women is they give us antidepressants, because they're like, all these issues are happening, and it's like, oh, here's some antidepressants to make you feel better. Which I was on for years, and then as soon as I started taking Ritalin, I was like, oh, this is the answer. This is what I want. This is what I needed. I'm like, fuck, all this time, it was annoying that it took that long to figure out what was wrong with me. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually funny you're saying this, because and I definitely agree that of the two genders, definitely the women would be less obvious, so there would be definitely obvious. High proportion.
Mm.
But it's funny because you're saying that, because I've got two mates now, guys. Mm. So one's on it and the other one's been diagnosed just now in like the last 2 weeks.
Incredible.
Where he's saying he's got it as well. So I think the others – so I definitely think women have it more, but I think actually across the board, in their 30s, I think like everyone
you're right.
has just the piled up shit that's been like, why is my life a mess?
Yeah.
Like, why have I never held a relationship for more than a bit of time?
And it's hard to hold friendships, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes with it. Like I am always – pressuring myself to be on time. It's a whole thing, but I'll know that I've got to leave the house in 20 minutes. And I'm like, well, I've got 20 minutes to sit here and do this, and then I'm rushed. Like, it's, but I notice when people get really mad at you, but it's like, we're not being disrespectful. We're just like, but it's amazing once you get the medication, how much instantly I just started weaning off all, any kind of antidepressants, because I was like, I wasn't sad. And if I was sad, I was sad because I couldn't finish anything I started. Like, what was making me sad was the fact that I felt like such a loser because I was so unable to just do anything, I was like, I hate myself because I'm shit at everything. The reason why I was shit at everything is because I couldn't fucking focus on anything. I couldn't sit there and do anything. Like, and then I remember Perth Fringe last year, first festival I did on Ritalin, and it was incredible in terms of like I wasn't drinking the whole time I was in Perth. I didn't drink. I would go to bed.
That's
my show was late. I had like a 9:45 show, so I'd be in bed. Well, I'd be home by 11 o'clock, and then I'd wake up and go work out, and then I would spend, like, when I got home and showered, I would sit at the table. And I would listen to the night before show. Like, I would sit at a table for 4 hours during the day and go through last night's show would make lists and get it all done. Just, it was incredible, the difference that of just getting shit done.
I mean, yeah, that does sound pretty amazing.
It's amazing.
Like, that's it. Did you notice Because one thing, even how he describes it and stuff, the only thing I do wonder, and I'm not saying it's equal and it's impossible to measure this stuff anyway, but because of its ability to make you focus, that do you reckon your creativity at all, like, which probably got made up for by the fact that you can sit there and focus, but like, do you reckon that took a hit at all, the connecting of random thoughts and stuff like that?
It helped it. Like, I was able to, especially the comedy festival that just went by, I was able to work at jokes where I could actually sit down and listen to the night before show and go, man, this joke is not hitting as much as I want it to hit. I wonder why. And I would actually go through and think about, like, is it delivery? And I would go through it. And in a few days, that joke would start to hit and really, really hit, because I had the patience to sit through and figure it out. Whereas before, I would go, I can't do this. I can't do it. I just can't do it. And I would lay on the couch and put a doona over my head. So instead of making the joke better, I would be like, I can't know what. I don't know. What am I doing? I can't do it. And I just wouldn't do it because I physically couldn't do it. You know, like, just physically was like, cannot do it, because I just cannot look at these words and I cannot make them focus and I can't. And then people call that depression. I'm like, it wasn't. You know what I mean? I felt suffocated with tasks, which is what ADD is. You feel suffocated with tasks. So then I would sleep for 2 hours every day. I'd go work out, burn 400 calories, and then I have to go sleep for 2 hours. Just like everyday tasks. I can't do it. It just would physically make you really, really tired. But now I don't nap. Like, okay. I feel like I want to nap now just because I've had a long week and I'm tired. But I probably won't, because as soon as we wrap up here, I'm going to take the dogs for a walk and then I've got a mate coming over. So I'll push through it, you know what I mean? And then I've slept better than I've ever slept because I'm not napping. Yeah. Anyway, this is I hope this is really helpful for anyone who thinks they've got ADD. Definitely get
Like, to be honest, you're describing so many of the sort of things that I've got I think I'm on top of it.
I mean, maybe that's the thing. Maybe a lot of comedians, man. I mean, ask around the comedy community and you'll see a bunch of, and male as well, as female, getting diagnosed later in life. Cause it's one of those things that just like drips, it just falls through a crack. And I'll tell you how you know you've got ADD. If something in your life goes wrong, then your whole life does fall apart. So basically you've got a routine. So you've got a routine every day that you follow. If something comes up that interrupts that routine, losing a job is the big one, you'll notice that your whole life will fall apart. You've lost one thing and you'll lose everything else. If you've got a full-time job when you have ADD, it's really good for you, because it keeps you in a schedule and routine, and it's very important for ADD and ADHD people. But, like, I've known people that have, like, lost a job and that's when they fall off, because then they can't get back in, you know? So the train is going and you got to, like, try and jump on, but you just can't jump on.
Okay, right. Yeah, so in terms of, like, exercise or whatever, it all just falls apart.
Yeah, and like, I had a bit of a fall apart a few months ago. So
I was going to say something like COVID's going to.
Yeah. So I was
really going to bring it out for a lot of people.
This is the thing, because I'd already been diagnosed at this point, but I really do notice that when something falls apart, everything falls apart, because that's just the way it is with this kind of I mean, what do you call it? I don't know if you call it a mental illness or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's a psych condition, maybe. But I, all through lockdown last year, I worked out every single day and I ate really well. I was drinking, I was eating a little bit more food than I should have, but I was really keeping things under control. And then, cause I keep a chart of my weight. And then the last time I put in my weight was August 2020. So something around August, which is probably that first, you know, that big lockdown of 6 weeks. So I didn't measure how much I weighed, but I knew I was still working out. And then I was still working out even though I wasn't weighing myself, because I knew I was eating more and I was drinking more. And then in February this year, I stopped working out. I started smoking again and I started drinking and I started eating. And I, like, in a space of 3 months, like 15 kilos done on. Yeah. This year. Yeah. Which is why I'm like, now I'm back on, like, I'm eating well, measuring food, blah, blah, blah. Worked out today. I'll go for a run later. Like, just trying to keep shit together. Because I've got to lose the weight now. I've got to lose, like, 25 kilos. Because I was already 10 kilos overweight. Put on 15. 25 kilos now.
25?
Mm. I'm a big girl. I'm a pretty big girl.
That's...
Yeah.
Like, respect. I like that goal. Like, that's impressive.
We'll see. We'll see what's happening.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
True, you haven't done it yet.
There you go. Good luck to everyone out there. Good luck, kids.
Yeah, I know. I might go get measured for how did you get measured? Just so I can know if you were curious if you had ADHD.
Go to a psychiatrist and get them to test you. Yeah. It's about 50 questions and then they kind of put it on the scale.
Oh, nice. I think that's useful for people to know. I think I'm like, I don't know. One thing I've always been pretty good at is cleanliness and stuff like that, which I don't know. If my mates are any indication, they're not the best at being clean.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty messy.
ADHD seems to have
kitchen and my bedroom, there's a chaos.
Yeah.
But when I get into it, when I've had a Ritalin, it's so amazing. Like especially on the weekends, when I've got time, like I'll have a Ritalin, I'll work out, and then I'm cleaning the kitchen and I'm cleaning. So when I do clean, I'm cleaning because I'm really into it. Yeah, and then like 2 hours later, I've like cleaned the toilets, I've mopped and all this stuff, and my sister like called me one morning. She's like, "Oh man, good for you." She goes, "That's heaps. Like, it's 2 hours of like really big cleaning." I was like, "Yeah, I had Ritalin. This is the best.
Yeah.
This would not have been done if I wasn't on it because I would have worked out and had to nap."
And then, like on top of that, you probably were having a great time doing it as well.
Yeah, like I just felt fine. Just was like, "Oh yeah,
let's." Yeah, like you just clean. Yeah. You're like perfect.
And I feel like
fixing tasks, just cleaning.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm not as manic as I was without it. Like, I feel like Ritalin really did calm me down because I'd be so manic because I'd have all these things I needed to do. And they're not big things. It's like, oh, you know, I've got to call this person back and I've got this gig coming up and this person is waiting on me to message them back. Something as small as this person is waiting on me to message them back and I have to get back to this and I have to email this and then I have to clean the kitchen and then I've got to get petrol in the car. Like, those five tasks, which sound like nothing, would, oh, my God, manic. Crazy. Yeah.
I can. Okay. Now, man. Okay. I might have to go get checked. I've got a to-do list where I put down, respond to this person, respond to this person, just because I don't do it otherwise.
I mean, I do that too. Like I have, like, especially when I've got a lot of stuff to do in one day, I'll do a big to-do list. But yeah, no, I don't think that's anything wrong with that. But it's just more just the suffocation that you feel when there's stuff to do. And it's just, you know, okay. And I get it. You know, and it is on par with like people who have depression, but my depression started because I had no energy to do anything or finish anything I started, which Ritalin helped me.
It definitely sounds like way better to get to even this is definitely unscientific, but it's almost better every time to just get someone on Ritalin instead of antidepressants first, just to see how they go, because antidepressants have so much more side effects.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, because I think that because GPs can give you a antidepressant, but if you want Ritalin, you've got to go to a psychiatrist. It's speed. So they really have to, like my guy has to call up this place in Canberra, get approval, and when I get my script, I take it straight to my pharmacy and they keep it there because I don't want to trust myself with it, because if I lose it, I'm in a lot of trouble. Because you lose a methamphetamine type drug, which is like Dexys, which I know a lot of ADD people are on Dexys, and I'm on like Ritalin, and I've actually had to go on another one for 3 months, and it didn't work for me. It was like 100, and I know people that are on this one, and they're like, "Oh my God, it's the best," and I'm like, "No, it was so bad for me. Like I was sleepless, tired. I felt gross. It was horrible. It was so horrible." And then when I went back to Ritalin, I was like, "Oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is crazy."
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I can't even get two scripts at once. Like, if I lose it, it's a big whoop. And then I left my script at my pharmacy, and then I had to go in and pick it up again. And the pharmacist was like, "I can't find it." And I just like very calmly went, "Well, you better," because.
Now that would be a beautiful thing to see. The amount of restraint that's acting right there.
Well, you better find it because I left it here. So
the amount behind that relaxed, you better find it.
Not my fault.
I leave it here.
Leave it here. It's safe here. And then they look, and then they've got like four different folders trying to find it. And it's like, I don't know if it's under Kelly or Fasuka or something else. I'm just like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
That's so funny.
Oh, mate. I've got a teacher's voice in me that my roommate hates it because she's just like, oh, like she thinks it's like either I'm coming across as mean or rude or anything. But it's very specific where I'm like, it's very specific where it's like sometimes you just need to get what you want and the only way to get it is to really ask politely and very directly. I think a lot of the time, especially women, don't know how to ask for things directly. Like if you're in a restaurant, how many times do you see a woman go, sorry, to the waitress? Sorry, can I get some water, please? Sorry. Like, no, don't say sorry. Just, excuse me, can we please get some water?
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah,
tangent.
Look, there's nothing wrong with being polite anyways, but I guess, excuse me.
I'm still polite.
Sorry. Makes sense.
Just being direct.
There's a difference. Yeah. Okay, I guess we've really just this turned into a Ritalin-focused podcast, but I was just genuinely interested.
This whole podcast is an ADD podcast, man. All over the place.
Yeah, no, that's what it is. Exactly. You've taken me totally into your world. I guess what?
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, so just quickly before we go to the book, because I'd like to use the books to talk about you. So very quickly, you're born here. You're from Melbourne?
Yes, I was born in Werribee.
Werribee?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. Are your family still down there?
Yes. Yes, my dad lives in Hoppers. My mum lives in Tarnate. My other brother lives in Tarnate. My other brother lives in Werribee and my sister lives in Werribee.
Oh, so it's four of you?
Yeah, four kids, yeah. I'm the third.
Nice, solid effort.
Okay. Mate, Catholic. And primo, Italiano, Catholic, girl, boy, 2 years in between.
Oh, wow. Mm. Okay, they did it perfect. Mate. Right. So you grew up there and then you've studied in stuff Melbourne, but then you went to
the States. Oh yeah, so I went to drama school at Rusden, where I met my now roommate Celia, and we lived together because we're both in our late 30s and single, so we're like, we might as well just be, you know, might as well just live together and take care of each other because men are, you know, aren't really around, I guess. I don't know, like people have families at our age, so we're just like, let's just live together and get some dogs. talking about a drama school like 20 years ago, and then I finished that degree, and then I did a dip ed in teaching secondary, and I taught for 3 days, hated it, and then worked at Foxtel for a few years.
That's amazing.
Isn't it great?
3 days.
3 days. Ugh.
God. I feel like you were just trying. You were flying right past that,
mate. 3 days.
It's ADD. That's what you do. What do you? Of course,
oh, dude. You talk to teenagers and tell me how you like it. You know what I mean? It's the worst. Oh god. And then I worked for Foxtel for a few years, and then I went overseas, and then I lived in America for 7 years.
And then you did comedy there and stuff.
Yeah. Did comedy and podcasting there. It chewed, nice. You know, chewed me up and spit me out, as it does, as the industry does.
You just keep coming back for more, right? Yeah.
Like a masochist.
Right. Okay, cool. Well, look, that's just a very brief summary, because then we'll go into the book and then we'll jump around. So your book of choice for today is?
It's Always Something. It's Always Something by Gilda Radner. And so Gilda Radner is one of the original Saturday Night Live players. She was married to Gene Wilder in the late 70s, early 80s. She's been in a few movies like Lady in Red and with him and stuff like that, but she was primarily known for – so she was in SNL when it was Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, Belushi, all that kind of stuff.
The classics.
Are you familiar with her? She's a weirdo. She did that like – I mean, I look back at some of the sketches and stuff, and it's not very funny and stuff. Like it's kind of you know, you just go, oh, whatever. But there's something about her that she's just really charming and silly and there's just something quite adorable about her. That and she's actually in heaps of stuff when you kind of see her face and you go, oh yeah, she was in that movie, she had a bit part here, and you know, she's, you know, those she did Mel Brooks stuff, and she's always acting, and like she did the Rosanna Dana thing, and I don't know. Like if you go through some of the really early SNL stuff, she's really great. Anyway, so she wrote a book called It's Always Something, and basically the premise of the book is she got a book deal when she married Gene Wilder. She got a book deal. So she started writing this book about how she was like a funny book about how she was a housewife, right? And she married to a Hollywood movie star. She was a housewife, and she like she went to Broadway. Like she did this whole one woman show on Broadway. Like she's was like one of the biggest female comedians the late 70s and early 80s. Got this book deal and was like trying to become a mom and yada yada yada. And then while she started writing the book, she got sick, and she was undiagnosed for a few years, and then finally they found out it was ovarian cancer. And it was already very, very advanced. So the book then changed to she's actually writing about her dealing with getting diagnosed with a possible terminal cancer. And then so every chapter is about, you know, her past, what brought her here, getting with Gene, and then like was it her life, and then all the cancer. So the book took, you know, I guess a while to be written, because as things changed in her medical history, you know, as things progressed, like she was in remission, it came back, they were the new chapters, you know. So she wrote this book as she was fucking dealing with this cancer that was just relentless, you know, and then she was trying to have a family with Gene and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, when she talks about her childhood, it was so interesting because she was really close with her father, and he died of brain cancer when she was like 11. And it's like she stayed at that immaturity level, which is what they say, the first big trauma as a kid, especially a loss of a parent, is like that's where they stay. You know what I mean? Like you have a think about friends that you know where they've lost a parent at 10, and you're like, oh yeah, he's still there. He's still a 10-year-old, even though he's 40, stuff like that. So anyway, so you read his book, and you know, and it's all about, you know, she's getting better, she's going blah, 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 blah. And then the last chapter, you turn it over and it's Gene Wilder, and he tells you that she's passed away.
Damn.
It breaks your heart. Like, so the chapter before that is just like this chapter where she tells this story about a dog that she used to own. It's a really sweet little story. And you're like, oh, that's a nice story. And you just turn the page and then it's Gene Wilder going, you know, 2 weeks after she wrote this last chapter, she took a turn and she passed away at the hospital, blah, blah, blah. And isn't that crazy? She didn't finish the book.
Damn.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful in that tragic sort of way, I guess. Mate. Like, so
I just turned that last page because it's like I knew she had died because she died in 1986, yeah. But I knew she had died. But then it was a part of me that was like, hang on a minute. I was like, just like flipping through. I'm like, what? Hang on. Like, is there nothing else? And yeah, and it broke and it just breaks you. I'm just trying to see if I can find that. The bit. But yeah, it just fucking it broke me. And also because the last chapter before that, she found a new doctor and because she'd gotten some pretty terminal notice about like, oh, there was a spot on her liver and all this stuff. And then the last chapter was like she found this, you know, Dr. Greenspan and he was like, no, that's just a shadow. He's like, that's fine. And like he had it and it was like, oh, my God, she's going to beat this shit, you know. And it fucking – she's fucking died. Fucking died, bro.
That's
break ya.
I mean,
it's beautiful.
Yeah, look, I that definitely adds. It's tragic, but it like in terms of it's sad that adds so much to it. Like in the fact, it almost makes it more real. I guess the whole thing, reading it like that, having that ending to it.
And this copy I have here, this copy was brought to, I think an ex-boyfriend brought it for me, and this copy doesn't have the Gene Wilder part in it. So I think that depending on the print that you got, depends. So this one doesn't have it in there. But my original copy, which I don't know where it is, so I would have lent it out to someone and never returned it. Wherever that copy is, that's the one that has. So because I'd like to have a look at it and reread that part. But it's not here.
Oh, so like the other versions literally just end with that story and then just ends.
Yeah, so this one here, it just ends.
Okay.
And that's it.
All right.
But there that's is, and, less... and the thing is, I didn't know it at the time, but... I didn't know it at the time, but rereading that last little story she told about the dog, she wrote that story knowing she was dying. She was dead, you know, and it was 2 weeks later, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But I just wish anyway.
So I guess first, why is this your favorite book?
Because the way she writes, it's so easy to read and she has my brain. Like just reading it, I remember the first time I read it, I made Celia read it because I was like, oh, my God, she's just like us. Like she's neurotic, you know. She's like, oh, my God, what if they don't like me? And I'd never read a woman talk about what if they don't like me, you know, and from a comedy point of view, you know. But what if they don't like me? What if they blah, 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 and just being neurotic and just really working hard to win over people. I just never, ever experienced that point of view before ever. Does that make sense?
Really? Okay. No. That is literally like the most powerful thing that can happen when you read a book is when you're like, oh, fuck, that's...
She's me.
That's me. I think like
she's
that.
She's me. Yeah. That's what I felt. I was like, she's
you're
me.
You're not alone.
Yeah. She was just like every way her thought patterns went, you know, whether it was positive or negative or crazy or whatever, I was just like, fuck, man, she's me. She just had a really similar like, blah, way of things, and I just really liked it, you know.
It does sound like that kind of like it would tie in with people who are in comedy as well, just having that kind of overthinking sort of stuff.
Total overthinker. That's the thing. She was a totally neurotic overthinker, and it was great.
Yeah.
Loved it, you know. And there was a part in the book where she just gently brushes over the fact that she had bulimia for 10-20 years and then just never talks about it. Better things to talk about than how she had bulimia for 20 years.
But focus on some tiny thing for like pages and pages.
But yeah, and I just love reading like because when she met Gene Wilder on a film set and he had just come out of a marriage and her marriage was like they were separating and she was like in love with him. She's like he smelt good. He was so handsome and she's like the rest of my time was devoted to trying to trick Gene into falling in love with me. And it was and you're reading it and just adoring where she's like trying to turn up where he is and she wore him down. She wore him down and he ended up marrying her.
That's hilarious.
I love it. It's adorable the way she's just like, la, 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 like, please marry me and stuff. It was adorable. I loved it.
And so does she write funny? Like, is it well written in that sense? Like, she's
100% real funny. Yeah. Like, just silliness, real silliness, and really great tangents as well. So I don't know if she had
really?
A ghostwriter. No, she's had a forward. There's no ghostwriter or anything.
I mean, she's a comedian, so she'd... And, like, to be honest, if she was getting that kind of credit back then in the late 70s, early 80s as a female
comic, the thing.
Like, she'd have to be bloody, like, absolute the best there is, like, around, to be honest.
She was the biggest star at the time. She was on the front cover of Rolling Stone. So in 1979, she did a one-woman show, a Broadway show, and it was like all the characters from SNL now on Broadway. There was a poster of her that channel, like in Broadway, that was at Winter Garden, and it went all the way around on the corner. Like, that's a big fucking deal. Like, that's her, like 10 foot tall. That's huge. That the fact that it was a chick and doing characters. Like, she wasn't doing stand-up. She was doing characters. And Paul Schaefer, remember the guy from Letterman? You know, that was her music guy? Like,
all right.
Yeah, man. Like, just.
So that's what I mean, yeah. Like, she elbowed her way in there hard. So I wouldn't be surprised if she'd written that and she was that funny, because, like, she's probably about.
Yeah.
Pretty talented. She's gone to there.
100%.
So, and how old were you the first time you read that?
Oh, I read it. Just before I moved to America. Yeah. How old was I? 27? Because that's when I started doing stand-up. I started late, like 27.
Yeah, yeah. Did this, like, thanks to this book or?
No, because I went to drama school. So I was doing, like, acting stuff. But then I was doing sketch stuff and improv stuff. And then Celia started doing stand-up. And then I started doing it, like, a year after her. Just because I was like, oh, this is the natural progression. And then once I started doing stand-up, I'm like, a lot more doors open for me than acting ever had. Like, I barely ever had any auditions for acting, ever, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'd have like one commercial, and then I started doing stand-up, and then all of a sudden I just knew everyone and got something here, got something there. It just opened up doors, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more doors open because you got to be funny. So, like, because then that's...
Well, it's always because with comedy you have to create, you have to write yourself, and you have to make your own work. But actors are used to just sitting back and letting someone else calls you. You know what I mean? Actors just sit back and wait. But comedians, they make and they push and they ask and they ask, and can I do it? Can I? And that's why a lot of actors then go into stand up, because the door opens. And a lot of the time, you know, the amount of times I get sent for commercials where they want a comical edge and stuff. Like, they love that you do stand-up, like, for normal commercial. The problem is most of us comedians don't look like someone who should be on TV.
Yeah, even that's changing, I reckon, slowly over time.
Slowly.
A bit more than it was.
Very
maybe.
Fucking slowly.
Slowly. Very fucking slowly.
I had a TV thing that I did, and I gave them my sizes. And then the costume person's like, I don't have anything in your size. I'm like, okay. And she's like, so I need you to wear a black blazer. Can you bring one? And I said, I don't own that. And she's like, well, I don't have any that are in your size. And I'm like, well, I don't know what you want me to do, because I don't own one. Do you want me to go out and buy one? And she goes, could you? And then just give us the receipt and we'll reimburse you. I'm not that fat. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, I know people that are huge. You know, you know, in power to them. I'm not that fat. I'm a size 16. Sometimes a 14. The underwear I'm wearing is a 14, but the leggings is a 16. But they're kind of baggy because I like them really, you know. Anyway.
I just love that. They're like, we didn't even try.
And I sort of told the person who was one of the producers in like a joking way, and they were like, oh, really? And I was like, that's fine. Don't worry about it. It's fine, but it made me feel shit.
Yeah,
she didn't mean to. She didn't mean to. She was honestly like, I just don't know how to, you know, fit you. And then when I got there, when we had costuming, I tried on a ton of stuff because I didn't look good in a lot of stuff you had. And then eventually they finally, because I had to wear like a business suit and stuff. But then eventually they got something for me and I looked amazing. And then they gave it to me at the end. It was like a $300 dress they had to buy for me. And then they ended up giving it to me, and she was like, oh, no one's really going to fit into this. You might as well keep it. So I was like, thanks. I'll wear it to a wedding, I guess. Because it was a beautiful dress, beautiful like business dress. But I was I'll wear it to a wedding, I guess.
There's a lot going on in that story. I don't know.
I know.
Yeah, it's like we're never going to need this again. So you just take that. Yeah. So you're like, thanks. But
it's like the hug with the slap. I know.
Yeah.
Anyway. What are you going to do?
It's a signing. So actually on that note though, was her writing was she feminist at all in her writing or was it more – because you're saying, hey, you're a feminist. I'm seeing that connection there. But I'm guessing that maybe she was without meaning to be.
A different tone. There was a different tone of femininity, I think, because the book is it didn't really focus on that kind of stuff because it really did kind of go where, it didn't really focus on it. When she talked about her career, she was surrounded by – there wasn't many moments of unfairness in her career for being a woman because she was actually surrounded by people that loved her. So people like Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd – Harold Ramis, they love women. They're like, I don't know what, I'm sure there's people that would disagree with me, but when you read this book, they lifted her up because they loved her. So no, I don't think so because it wasn't a prevalent thing. She wasn't like missing role. Like I didn't get a tone of that at all where she was like, oh, I missed out on this role because I, you know, am a woman. But also she was very maybe there's a little bit of stuff about how she was always going to be the sidekick. She was never going to be the leading lady because she wasn't beautiful enough.
It's kind of so it's depending the
comedy
the circles you were in.
She wasn't doing stand up. I bet you find someone like Joan Rivers. She'll have the stories of like never been good enough, never this, never that, blah 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 blah. But also the book is about her surviving more than it is her career. Her career is only like 2 or 3 chapters. The whole book's about her, surviving. One of the parts of the book that she does really talk about is that she was really sick for like 2 years before she got a diagnosis. And if she had been diagnosed earlier, she probably would have survived it because by the time they found it, it was in stuff. It was already there. And I think one of the things she does talk about is that no one believed her. No one believed her that she was sick. And I think maybe that is a thing that happens with women is that, you know, we got – cramps, we get this, we get that, and people are like, oh, it's just your period, oh, it's just the middle of your period, oh, it's just the end of your period, you know what I mean? Like it's everything is we are told to just ignore so many things that really should be red flags because that's just not, you know, whatever's happening is just not good.
Does that make sense? And I guess this goes back to what you were saying before about like not wanting to make a scene almost, so you just keep it to yourself.
I'm sorry, can I have more water? Well, a lot of women don't want to be trouble.
Sorry, could I get could I get a diagnosis?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Do you mind if you just do more tests for me? I think there's a lot of that.
Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah, I think that, so I take it back. I think that now thinking about it, there was a lot about that stuff in there. And then
deeper,
So she got this like blood test done, which shows cancer elevation levels. And the first time she got that test was like 2 years later. And it was through the roof. So they knew she had cancer somewhere in her body, but they didn't know where. And now she did. And then after she died, Jean actually became a massive advocate for this particular blood test to be done early for women. So you could see elevated levels. And now it's a common thing. Like your levels are supposed to be 8 and her first blood test, it was 247. You know, something was wrong. But no one had done that test earlier. Everyone's like, oh, you're stressed. Oh, you're working on a new show. Oh, you're stressed. Oh, this. Oh, it's your period. And then menopause because she was 42 or, you know, younger. I think she was 39 when it first started happening. People were like, oh, you're going through early menopause. And she was trying to get pregnant as well. So people were like, oh, you're having a miscarriage or this is happening. But like all these symptoms of like massive pain, bloating, sore legs, like all this stuff that was. Cancer is in your ovaries and is spreading rapidly. No one took her seriously.
Right. And that's like, that's
medical gaslighting.
That's one way of putting it. It's I guess it's weird though, because like you're saying you read this now a long time ago, like 10, 15 years ago.
I've reread it a bunch.
But it's like as in it's sounding like now, from what you've said, it's really relevant now to your life more so than it was 10, 15. So it's interesting how it was that hitting you back then.
Yeah.
And now you're...
And this, we're talking about 1989 and people still aren't listening to women. Do you know what I mean? I've been to the doctor where I'm like, I am telling you this is the red flag you need to notice. I've said that to my doctor before. And she's like, oh. I was like,
so it's even female doctors as well. They're also
no one knows because it's just our bodies are, you know, like, you know, look at the these are the symptoms of ovarian cancer: bloating, lower back pain, stomach pain, restlessness, weight gain, weight loss. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah,
come on, man.
That's just a Saturday.
That's Monday morning for me.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, as in, so to go into that, like, for a sec, if you want, did you feel like you learnt more from getting more towards where she was at? Like, did that give you some new perspectives, maybe,
in what
or
way?
Anything like that? I don't know. Getting to the age where she, like you're saying, as she's now, you're roughly around the age she was when she actually wrote this stuff.
Oh my god, I am too. OMG. I am too.
I'm sorry.
She died in 1989, age 42. It is 2 years and a little bit away from where I am now. So I am the age that she was when she first started going through it. Oh my god.
I'm so sorry.
Oh my god, that is so sad. Oh well.
I've never had someone
best find someone who resembles Gene Wilder and make him marry me. Toot sweet.
That's okay, now I feel okay, let's move on from that. Then to go on that actually, so Gene Wilder, is he awesome?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, in the book he is, but he has a terrible burden because he's taking care of someone who's dying. So there's a lot of elements in the book where it might come across that he's being selfish, but he's not because his wife's dying and he had a career. Mm. This is see no evil, hear no evil. This is Richard Pryor. He was at the top of his game. Willy Wonka. He was a massive movie star and his wife was dying of a cancer that nobody talked about. She was the first, when she died of ovarian cancer, people started talking about ovarian cancer. You know what
right.
I mean? And it was because, you know, and it was like pretty heavy AIDS time as well, you know? So it was just, no one really talked about it. Even now people don't hate talking about it, you know? It's just such a, you know, when things are wrong with female bodies, it's such a, ovarian, breast cancer, blah.
Have you had experiences like that? Your own medical stuff, it's like...
Oh, definitely with the ADHD, being misdiagnosed with like antidepressants for years and stuff like that. So, yeah, really annoying.
So it's weird. So you're, the medical diagnosis issue side of it kind of hits you a bit more than you.
It's really frustrating. But this is what I take from the book and from everything else, is that no one cares about you more than you. So if you want to get anything done, sometimes you've got to be a bit of a bulldog, you know?
Right.
Like no one gives a shit. Like I'll get tests, conversation for another time, but I'm doing IVF at the moment. And no one cares more than I do. So I have to call and get the results. I have to ask the questions. I have to do this. If I let someone else deal with what's happening right now, like if I leave it up to the nurses or my doctor to make sure the ball is rolling, the ball she will never roll.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I don't double check the two bags of medication that I get once a month, something's missing, you know? I have to be really, really on top of it and I have to be really, really vigilant because no one gives a shit. No one cares about me. I'm the only one who cares. I have to call ahead and make sure that everything is ready. I have to make sure blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, that's – I think that could be a life lesson for a lot of people sometimes.
I think
sometimes
it's really important for
that.
Everyone to really know that is what – for themselves, that no one gives a shit. No one cares about you except you.
Mm.
You got to do it for yourself because – if I have to wait for everyone to do anything for me, it just won't happen. And it's not because I don't care. It's because they've got their own shit.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm the same. Yeah.
Oh, well.
You'd think we would have learnt it from growing up that no one cares.
I know.
I was still mum's favourite. I'm
I bet you are your mum's favourite. I don't doubt that at all.
All right, now that we've jumped around, I guess we've kind of gone into a few things.
I think so. I think this is really fucking thorough.
Yeah. So I always finish off by asking just quickly, do you feel like you've got any new connections between you and the book?
Yeah, I do. I'm the age that she started dying right now, which is great. So, I'm trying to have a baby. The exact same position she was in when she found out that she was sick. So this is good. Okay, I'll let you know if I've got a terminal illness.
Yeah, I'm feeling like I don't want... this has been a lot to put... Well, hopefully the rest of your Sunday gets steps up.
Nah. Then.
Okay, well, awesome. You've been so much fun. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.